News 18 Daybreak. The perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.
Hello and welcome to News 18's morning podcast, Daybreak. I'm Pathikrit Sengupta. While there's understandably a pandemic of coronavirus-related news all around, let's have a listen to some other big stories. BJP Lok Sabha MPs Jagannath Sarkar and Nishit Pramanik on Wednesday tendered their resignation as members of the West Bengal Assembly to which they were elected in the recent polls. Sarkar and Pramanik, MPs of Ranaghat and Kooch Bihar respectively, went to the Assembly and submitted their resignation letters to Speaker Biman Banerjee. Pramanik said that they are quitting as MLAs as per the directive of the BJP leadership. The Saffron Party had also fielded two other Lok Sabha MPs, Union Minister Babul Supriyo and Lokit Chatterjee, and Rajya Sabha member Swapan Dasgupta, but they lost the elections. The Saffron Party bagged 77 seats, while the Trinamool Congress secured a landslide victory, winning 213 of the 292 constituencies that went to polls. Election was countermanded in two seats due to the death of candidates. The BJP has risen from just 3 MLAs in the 2016 elections to 77 MLAs. In order to add experience and in running the government, some MPs had been fielded, Sarkar said. However, the party could not achieve its goal of forming the government in the state, he said. Sarkar asserted that they are fighting the assembly election despite being MPs and then resigning after winning do not reflect any organizational weakness of the BJP. Pramanik said that they cannot remain members of both the Lok Sabha and the state assembly simultaneously. While Pramanik won in the assembly election by a wafer-thin margin of just 57 votes, defeating TMC candidate Udayan Guha from the Dinahata seat, Sarkar won by a comfortable margin of 15,878 votes from Shantipur. Dinahata and Shantipur assembly segments fall within the respective Lok Sabha constituencies of Pramanik and Sarkar. The new LDF ministry headed by Kerala Chief Minister Pinarayi Vijayan is expected to assume power on May 20. An indication in this regard was given by the Chief Minister at a press conference on Wednesday. Responding to a query, Vijayan said the plan is to take oath on May 20. Things are moving in that direction. The matter has to be discussed in the meeting of the Left Democratic Front, he said. When asked if the swearing-in date was decided after consulting an astrologer, Vijayan quipped, "Are you saying that I am a believer in astrology? You people tend to see it both ways." The CPIM-led LDF, led by Vijayan, recorded a thumping win over the opposition UDF in the keenly fought April 6 assembly polls, bucking an over four-decade-old trend of power alternating between the two fronts. While the LDF won 99 of the total 140 seats, the Congress-led UDF could win only 41. The BJP, which had won one seat in the previous assembly polls, drew a blank. Israel killed a string of senior Hamas military figures on Wednesday and pounded three multi-story towers as it hammered the Gaza Strip with airstrikes, and militants in the territory fired rocket barrages. Dozens have died in the worst violence since a 2014 war with no resolution in sight. The fighting has taken on many hallmarks of that devastating 50-day conflict between Israel and Hamas, but with a startling new factor, a burst of fury from Israel's Palestinian citizens in support of those living in the territories, as well as counter-violence by Jewish Israelis. In response, Israel deployed border guards in two mixed Arab-Jewish cities that saw unrest in previous days, including the burning of a Jewish-owned restaurant and a synagogue, the fatal shooting of an Arab man, and attacks on Arab-owned cars. It was a rare use of the paramilitary force, which normally puts down protests by Palestinians in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Balls of grey smoke rose in Gaza as Israeli airstrikes struck apartment towers and blasted multiple Hamas security installations. In Israel, hundreds of rockets fired by Gaza's Hamas rulers and other militants at times overwhelmed missile defenses and sent air raid sirens and explosions echoing across Tel Aviv, Israel's biggest metropolitan area, and other cities. The death toll in Gaza rose to 65 Palestinians, including 16 children, and 5 women, according to the health ministry. At least 365 have been wounded, including 86 children and 39 women. 7 have been killed on the Israeli side by rocket fire, including the first death of an Israeli soldier in this round of conflict. The other deaths have been civilians, including 3 women and 2 children, one of them a 6-year-old killed in a rocket strike on an apartment building in the city of Sderot. Dozens in Israel have been wounded. Islamic Jihad confirmed the deaths of 7 members, and Hamas confirmed the death of a top commander and an unspecific number of others. The Israeli military says at least 30 Palestinians killed so far were militants. There was no sign that either side is willing to back down. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to expand the offensive, saying it will take time. Hamas has called for a full-scale intifada, or uprising. The last such uprising began in the year 2000 and lasted more than 5 years. The latest eruption of violence began a month ago in Jerusalem, where heavy-handed police tactics during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan and the threatened eviction of dozens of Palestinian families by Jewish settlers ignited protests and clashes with police. A focal point was the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, a site sacred to Jews and Muslims. Hamas, claiming to be defending Jerusalem, launched a barrage of rockets at the city late on Monday, escalating the ground tensions into a new Israel-Hamas punching match. Since then, militants have fired more than 1,050 rockets from Gaza, according to the Israeli military, and Israel has conducted hundreds of strikes in the tiny territory where 2 million Palestinians have lived under a crippling Israeli-Egyptian blockade since Hamas took power in 2007. 2 infantry brigades were sent to the area, indicating preparations for a possible ground invasion. On Wednesday, Israel stepped up its targeting of Hamas's military wing. The military and internal security agency said they carried out a complex and first-of-its-kind operation that killed the Hamas commander in charge of Gaza City, the highest-ranking Hamas military figure killed by Israel since 2014, and several other senior militants involved in rocket production. Israel has struck 350 targets and killed at least 30 militants since Monday night, 14 of them on Wednesday, Israeli military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus said. In one of the fiercest attacks, Israeli fighter jets dropped 2 bombs on a 14-story building in Gaza City, collapsing it. The building, located on the busiest shopping street in the Roman neighborhood, housed businesses in addition to offices for Hamas's Al-Aqsa satellite channel. Airstrikes also brought down a 12-story office building that housed Hamas offices as well as other businesses, and heavily damaged a 9-story building with residential apartments, medical companies, a dental clinic, and, Israel said, Hamas's intelligence offices. In both cases, Israel fired warning shots, allowing people to flee. Soon after, Hamas fired 100 rockets at the Israeli desert town of Beer Sheba in what it said was retaliation. It has been 7 years since the two sides held formal negotiations. Israel's political scene pays little attention, and the peace process was hardly an issue in the country's recent elections. Arab nations, including several that recently reached normalization deals with Israel, rarely push for any resolution. The result has left the nearly 5 million Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem living in a limbo. The Biden administration is considering sanctions over China's alleged use of forced labor in production of solar panels and other components in renewable energy, climate envoy John Kerry told lawmakers on Wednesday. Kerry's comments at the House Foreign Affairs Committee hearing sought to defuse one of the main arguments that congressional Republicans have cited against President Joe Biden's push for a climate-friendly makeover of the U.S. economy. China's manufacturing dominance risks implicating buyers of Chinese-made solar panels, batteries, and other green energy tech in that country's human rights abuses. Much of the world's polysilicon used in photovoltaic cells for solar panels comes through China's Xinjiang province, where China is waging a sustained campaign against Chinese Muslims and ethnic minorities. That includes detention of more than 1 million people who rights groups, news organizations, and governments say are forced into labor in factories and other workplaces. China's foreign ministry last month called the accusations lies and false information concocted by anti-China forces. Republicans have cited those human rights concerns about Chinese-made renewable energy components and China's status as the world's largest emitter of climate-wrecking fossil fuel pollution in countering Democratic calls to step up U.S. solar and wind production and wind down coal and petroleum use. How can you assure us that slave labor coming out of China, where genocide is taking place as we speak, are never a part of the climate solution in the United States? Asked Representative Michael McCaul of Texas, the senior Republican on the committee. Kerry told McCaul he was absolutely correct to raise the concern. It is a problem, Kerry said. He cited solar panels that we believe in some cases are being produced by forced labor. Kerry also listed rare earth minerals produced by China and used in things such as magnets for wind turbines, among other uses. Kerry said the administration was assessing whether to add those to the list of products from Xinjiang province that the United States is already penalizing. He said he did not know where the administration was in that review. The State Department did not immediately respond to a question seeking details. Biden is calling for the United States to put trillions of dollars into his jobs plan and other proposals that would retool U.S. power and transportation sectors to pump out less fossil fuel pollution. That includes promoting U.S. use of solar, wind, and other renewable energy, and boosting the country's patchy production of components vital to those industries. The best thing we could do is be more competitive when it comes to China's dominance in the field of climate-friendly tech, Kerry said. Other countries are cornering the market on that. Why aren't we? He asked. Kerry is a former Secretary of State under President Barack Obama, who now serves as Biden's envoy for climate and natural security. Right, everyone, that's all for today, but we will be back again tomorrow with a fresh dose of news for you. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter Daybreak at news18.com and do follow the website for more news and developments. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and have a very good day.
News 18 Daybreak, the perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.